He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin.
And
this is
we are Car Keys.
Yes, you are.
And we had our first winter storm over the weekend before this show is being taped. And we saw lots of interesting road issues. Jay will talk about a few. I saw a few. Lots of people who do not know how to drive in the snow. And aside from that observation, stupid things happen when people who do not know how to drive in snow. And this doesn't matter whether it's a two-wheel drive vehicle or a four-wheel drive vehicle. These vehicles do not stop in snow whether they had eight wheels on them. They wouldn't stop if you're going too fast around a corner or going too fast towards a stop sign and the roads are slippery and wet. Anti-lock braking becomes anti-stop braking. And I have ranted about anti-lock braking in this venue for many years of this show. They do help you steer, but they don't necessarily help you stop. But there were lots of incidents. I'll tell you who loved the storm, the body shops.
Can I just say that I have never seen as many cars. Really, I've been here for a long time, and I was going up Music Mountain, and there's one little place on Music Mountain where
Music Mountain is a doozer of a road.
It's steep, but the point is, I've been going up there for decades, and I have never seen more people off the road at intervals. I'm thinking, come on, guys. It's not that it's not that hard. It's just if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to get into difficulty.
Well, I forgot to
bring... I'm not saying that I'm the greatest.
I forgot to bring my list of winterization tips from one of the insurance companies that came across my computer screen, but I can remember some of the things that they tell you to check for your cars before you get involved in winter driving, and many of them we have talked about in this show over the years. One is you need to have tires with some tread on it, and lots of people wear their tires down and don't think about replacing tires or maybe can't afford to replace their tires as the seasons change and you get into the winter. The other thing you need to do is you need to check to make sure your windshield washer bottle is full of freeze-proof fluid. And your wiper blades are in good shape. So if you're following these tractor trailers who suck up the air behind them and everything that's in the air when they're going down a slushy road, it ends up on your windshield, and you want to be sure you can see well out of the car. A third thing you want to do is if you have your car parked outside, as I do every night of the year when it snows, unless you've got a cover on your windshield and or there's a heavy frost, your windshield is very often obscured by either snow, sleet, or ice in the morning, and many people don't clear their windshield properly when they start driving off, and you can't see very well then either. So then you've got the taillights and the headlights, all of which should be uncovered when you're brooming off the windshield and the top of your car, if you're even doing that, before you go out in a snowstorm. But wiper blades are important when it's snowing because it's amazing how the snow can build up and wiper blades can be unable to properly clear the snow to give you a windscreen that you can see through if the blades are not in good shape. But back to the driving. So Jay, you want to say something? Go ahead.
I can say a bunch of things and in order or not so in order. The first thing is the snowstorm, the first of the year, which is always, you know, we're all a little rusty in our winter driving. And winter driving is like everything else in driving and in life. It takes practice to
get used to it.
To get used to it and to be good at it. So you have a bunch of people, young drivers, who may have never driven in the snow before. You have people who have not driven often or people who are just not experienced drivers. People get tense. You know, what boggles my mind is this happened on a Saturday, right, if I recall correctly. Yeah. A lot of people probably did not absolutely need to be out there in the snow. And this is the first thing, you know, somebody pointed out a very long time ago to me, saying, you know, I don't need four-wheel drive. If it's that bad out, I really don't need to go out. And, you know, if you're prepared, you hunker down and you weather the storm. Now, not everybody can stay home and not go out, but if you don't absolutely need to, don't go out in the middle of a snowstorm. That's the first thing. My daughter, for example, was leaving, and we knew that the day before. She knew it 2 days before leaving out of Providence to go to fly out to wherever, Colorado. But she had to drive an hour and a half from New Haven to Providence. Well, when we looked at the map, it was clear that that was going to be badly hit. Well, she left at 6 o'clock in the morning, got to the airport 6 hours before the flight, but she beat the snow. And it's just...
It's common sense in a way that
doesn't... Plan. That's the first thing. Plan.
But the plan part, and you could... I mean, some of the people who were all... Look, anything can happen at any time.
Well, it's clear that this show is not going to retrain people's thinking about going out in storms or not, because I was in Torrington, so I was out in the storm on Saturday. And the number of shoppers that were actually attempting to or actually shopping just boggled my mind, given that it was snowing fairly briskly. I don't know if that's the proper adjective, but when I was there. And people also, you know, to maybe their credit, but maybe not. I don't know why people who have to go in mobility devices such as electric wheelchairs have to try and go out in that storm, because the parking lots aren't adequately plowed much of the time. And to see somebody trolling along in a motorized wheelchair from a vehicle that was obviously equipped for this kind of thing into one of the stores was quite it amused me that they wanted to do this in the middle of a storm. So to retrain Americans listening to this show not to go out when it snows isn't going to happen.
It's not about that, because the people who are off the road...
discussing it is. And I don't think we need to belabor it too much, okay?
Okay, but in certain cases, we're not talking about people who have to go. What we're talking about is it's just before the holiday. I mean, there are reasons in Saturday, it's your day. The point is to understand that you are potentially shifting terrain, and that's where... You know, what you're able to do on a state road plowed and what you're able to do on a back road.
I was having this conversation yesterday with somebody about remembering reading articles in Flying Magazine, and every month they had an article about, you know, some airliner that went down, and they really analyzed the causes. And in the airline industry and in aircraft accidents, it's exactly the same as in car accidents. 90+% of all accidents are caused by human error. And what inevitably we were reading is that it is a chain of events that leads to a bad decision.
Yeah.
And so if we can change that a little bit, all these decisions that lead to that bad event, you know, we can change the outcome.
So here I'm going to give a list of things that drivers should do in winter driving, and then we'll terminate this topic. First, leave plenty of room between you and the car in front of you when you're traveling along a road that has got lots of slush, snow, or less than ideal traction conditions on it. Secondly, on straightaways, if you're going too fast, start coasting down as opposed to necessarily trying to brake late into when you arrive at a turn, because you do not want to go into a turn often at the same speed level that you may be going on a straightaway. Because you have centrifugal force or whatever, you have the momentum of a car, of a vehicle's weight operating on against the forces of getting, staying in control on a curve. And if you're going too fast, Jay personally dealt with something like that this weekend, but I saw the accident. A car may not stay on the road if it's got too much weight and you're going too fast into a curve and you don't have good tractive surfaces. On going down hills, you really need to be in a lower gear. I was in Torrington, as I said. There's a large hill on East Main Street that goes up towards a lot of shopping and come back down into the center of town. And everybody dutifully, actually, to their credit, left a good space between themselves and the car in front as we were going down that hill. And there are a number of traffic lights, any of which can turn from green to red in a moment's notice. I do not know what's running them, but I don't think a computer is. So we didn't have any accidents on East Main Street at that point. So people were taking heed in that form of leaving enough space between themselves so that if somebody braked in front, the car behind could brake adequately. Also, use flashers if you're in a slow mode move going down a hill is my recommendation, because it gives the car behind you notice that maybe there's something that they should be paying more attention to than their cell phone, if they're even trying to use their cell phone in the storm conditions. There are probably a couple of other things I could say as well, but the basic thing is too much speed is going to be the initial problem that may end up in result in an accident. So go at the appropriate speed that you think should be appropriate for the condition of the road you're on at the time you're on it.
All right, one last question. The thing that you saw, was that because of, was it a speed thing?
Speed was low, I'm sure, but I'm sure speed was, you know, excessive speed, right, for, you know, as
well. As you can have an accident at low speed. I had an accident in my Volkswagen van,
yep,
for exactly the reason that I have alluded to, with anti-stop lock brakes not stopping, and I lost total control of the vehicle going straight, and I was not able to make a turn, even with any lock brakes, because there was 3 inches of snow on the driveway, and I ended up in a tree head on, and I wasn't going 10 miles an hour.
How did you end up in a tree? You must have been looking at the tree, Robin.
There was a bend in the road, as you said happened to somebody this weekend, and I saw it too late, and I thought I was going to make the turn, and it didn't happen. We don't need to discuss it, I ended up in the tree, and it's 10 miles an hour.
What I do,
what the speed is,
if the road conditions are iffy, I test the road conditions. I wait till there's nobody on the road around me, and I will hit the brakes and where there's no risk of consequences, and I will accelerate, and I will see how much grip I have, and it gives me an idea of how slippery the roads are not. And it's just an idea. It's not there to give me blind confidence, but just test it. Plus, it's fun. Some of us actually like driving in the snow, and some of us really miss those handbrakes that, you know, hold the rear wheel
so you can J-braking turns.
Lots of fun.
So I like driving in snow too. I am an admitted snow enthusiast. Snow driving
So here's the thing. Both of you like it. I'm sure Marshall likes it. And I'm only raising that because there are people who like it. And P.S., they know what to do. And what I am saying is there's a difference, you know, and of course training comes into it, but
practice comes into it, really.
Practice comes into it as well. I know that you've got another topic. I saw something this weekend, however, that just was absolutely...
Rant away.
Gobsmacked. It's not even a rant. It's wow. There's a company of some sort that was advertising their services, and they picked some of the most... They are apparently some sort of car purchasing entity. And they picked... If you could pick four things, like car... manufacturer suggested retail price, MSRP, miles per gallon, MPG, whatever. If you could pick four things that everybody should know if you're actually going to buy a car, they said these four things were incredibly complicated. And so they were going to save you all the problems of car buying.
Well, you've mentioned two, and I don't think the MPG thing is a complicated situation.
Well, I know you
don't. I think the MSRP thing is a complicated situation only because it's a known situation that you can probably buy your car for less than the manufacturer's suggested retail price. The question is how far below that can you go? And that's where people who study the car buying process can learn whether or not they can get a particular model of car at an X percent figure off of the MSRP or not. And that's also where sometimes those MSRP discounts are bigger at the end of year, model year sales events. And as I have said over and over, there's a car sale going on just about every day in every car dealership in America, because if it's not Washington's birthday, it's July 4th. If it's not Thanksgiving holiday, it's Christmas. And there's a sale before every event. But that part, I agree, was complicated.
No,
MPG is not complicated.
Wait a second. It's not the MSRP itself. It's the fact that there is such a thing. And my point with this entire ad is, if you are going to be so disengaged from the subject of buying a car that you want someone else to do it, you're willing to pay them for everything, shouldn't you think about whether you should be driving?
Well, I think, you know, you're covering a lot of things. Some people may like cars and may want to know exactly what they want as a car for a car, but just don't want to go through that the experience of going and doing the purchase.
Saturn made a whole business out of it.
You say, okay, I know I want this car. Robin, will you go buy me this car? And that's it. So that's one thing. The other is saying, I don't know what car I want or what car I need because I'm not that much into cars, but I'm actually an excellent negotiator. I mean, you could have that other extreme too. Somebody just doesn't know cars, but is a great negotiator. Well, you can
at which point you call Robin or Jay. Everything defaults in the same way that if you're talking to a doctor, everything defaults to come in and see me, let me look at it.
Well, knowledge can be king over the lack of knowledge.
So it beats the alternative.
In just about everything. Yeah.
But all I'm saying is you've got to find someone that you know and trust. You know, if you know what you don't know, find someone you know or trust and say, hey, I've got to go do this. I don't know what I'm doing. Help me.
But there are also, again, there are a lot of good cars out there and people have different opinions. If you come and ask Robin and then come and ask me what car you should buy, you're going to have different views.
That's part of the fun.
And both views will probably, if you listen to any one of us, you might end up with a very good car. You might just end up with a different car. And you may like Robin's car better or you may like my car better.
Right. That's
America. Or a third one.
Okay.
Let's change topics because we can discuss that in a whole show. I want to go to pickup trucks because I've talked about Ford's aluminum body pickup truck for
a long
time.
What do you know about
General Motors, you're not going to say anything yet. But GM and Ford got into a little bit of advertising war. General Motors was bashing Ford's aluminum body, saying it wasn't as strong as a steel. And many of you listeners have probably seen the ad. About General Motors dropping pointed.
Was that
heavy,
ages ago?
Yeah, you know, they're still they restarted it not a month ago. I saw the ad again. But to the point of this topic, GM is about to, in 2 years or more or less, introduce a new composite pickup bed in lieu of going to aluminum to follow Ford, and it's going to be carbon fiber, which is a very expensive, very lightweight plastic type of material for their pickup beds within probably 2 or 3 years. They're experimenting with them as we speak in their program for next generation development pickups. And carbon fiber, Jay knows, is very, very strong, a very, very strong material. It's also quite an expensive material, often found on exotic cars and dashboards and various other interiors of cars, and sometimes even in bodies. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when General Motors brings out the counterpoint to the Ford aluminum body pickup, which is a very successful pickup, by the way. And I don't think very many people have been influenced by General Motors pickup instead of Ford's, or let's say Dodge Rams instead of Ford's, because steel is allegedly more dent and maybe tear resistant than aluminum, which may be true. But I don't know very many people who load pickup beds by dropping things from, let's say, a certain number of feet above the pickup bed into a pickup bed to load the truck. Usually you slide things into a pickup bed, but the solution to that is you put a bed liner in and it's going to take care of whatever General Motors was trying to do to dent the sales lead of Ford pickups, which did not go anywhere as far as I can tell.
I hate to be sarcastic, or I don't think whether Ford or GM puts a cardboard bed in their trucks or anything else, I think there's not much you can do to sway
a loyalist.
I will agree with
that. And there's nothing more loyalist than a pickup
truck owners.
So, okay, it's all fine and dandy. They're promoting awareness, and the rest of the world knows what pickup trucks look like. But the guys who drive them know them
the best.
And they're going to buy a Ford or a Chevy. That's it.
Or a Dodge, or now a Nissan. Or a Toyota.
No.
Yes, they are. They're doing that. The sales are up. Jay doesn't
know
anything
facetious
about the sales. He's being a little bit facetious. But the point is, the pickup truck wars for materials all having to do with trying to make their trucks go further on a gallon of gas, even with the gas prices being low, is what's driving a lot of this new technology input into bodies.
But
I will say, and the composite bed that General Motors will have will be as rust resistant as the aluminum body, maybe more so. Those bodies, whether aluminum or carbon fiber, will be far more rust resistant or almost rust immune than the steel body pickup trucks that remain on the road.
And in the bigger picture, where it matters is pickup trucks, trucks in general, but now pickup trucks, because we considered SUVs to be trucks, and they are, but that market has shrunk for U.S. manufacturers. But really, what's left as a big share of the pie for U.S. manufacturers is in the truck market, and the truck market is still the biggest segment in the automotive
We know the Ford 150 is the industry, largest selling vehicle numerically in the country as of anything produced today
But once foreign manufacturers start putting a dent in that market share, it is going to affect GM and Ford and Chrysler in a significant way.
Yeah, and long-term thinking is important. I want to go back to something that we were talking about at the beginning of the show, just vis-a-vis winter and tires and SUVs, basically. That is, you could have 20-wheel drive, and if your tires aren't good, it doesn't help you. So
fatter the tire, the less grip you may have, too, because you're floating more with a fat tire than you are with a skinny tire. It's like aquaplaning. It's like water skiing or like skiing, snow skiing. If you have narrower skis, you don't float as much in a situation skiing. You want to float on skis. You don't want to grip on the ground underneath. But narrow tires cut through the snow more. They do not float as much. But the tires, all these optional tires you can buy on trucks, and Jay wants to get in here, it's not always best to buy the biggest tire for your vehicle in certain road conditions that you're going to experience most of the time when you're driving.
The bottom line is, if you can afford to put snow tires on a car for the winter months, put snow tires on your car.
And then rotate them after winter's over and put the road tires on again in the springtime.
Okay, let's say you can't. And let's say you've just been driving on the same tires that you had car came with, because
I just had this experience. I bought two sets of tires. I bought a set of Michelins for my Jeep, and I bought a set of what I thought were fairly more all-season alternative tire, new tires for my Sonata. I just took those tires back because when I wasn't able to see what the real tread was like when I purchased the tires, because they didn't have the tire that I actually purchased for me to look at physically. So I took the salesman's advice, ordered the tire, got the tires, took them home, looked at them, and said, I don't want this tread pattern. It's too aggressive for non-winter season. And I've just discovered what tread design can do for one of my pet compulsive things, which is gas mileage. If you get the wrong tread, you can lose gas mileage ratings for your cars. And hybrid cars are particularly sensitive to this situation, because they come with tires that have been designed to help them get as best gas mileage as possible. And you put a replacement tire on that doesn't have the same kind of road-going characteristics as what the manufacturer decided to use, you may lose anywhere from 2 to 5 miles a gallon with the replacement tire, which I'm finding out is happening with my Jeep, which came with moderate all-season tires. They were Firestone Destination. I put Michelins on, and I can tell you right now, in one tank full of gas, I've lost between 2 and 5 miles per gallon per tank full with the Michelins on it, which means they're gripping better and not rolling as well as the tires that came on the Jeep in the beginning.
Life is all about compromise.
It is indeed.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my-